I wanted to start with this question up on the screens, which is this. How central does God need to be in our lives? I guess whether we're here today as believers or we're just looking into things, we know that there is a difference. We know there's a difference between having God somewhere in our lives and having God, you know, in the driving seat, right at the middle. There's a type of believer, isn't there, where God is in our lives. He's there somewhere. But if we're honest, and maybe our prayers kind of indicate this, mostly we're keen for God to fit in with my plans rather than for me to fit in with his. So we definitely pray, you know, if we need help, who doesn't pray? But often God functions in our lives as, on the screens there, a kind of glorified assistant. He's a butler whom we summon when we need him. Well, obviously, we wouldn't express it that way. That sounds very rude. But practically, that is often the dynamic in the relationship. And one of the telltale signs that this is how our relationship with God functions is that actually we still have many of the same fears and the same insecurities, the same anxieties as those around us who don't know God at all. Maybe you know that in your life. Now, what I've been describing there is actually a pretty accurate description of the kind of relationship that Jacob has with God, at least at the start of our passage. I think Jacob's a great guy to be studying, and we've been doing this series through the life of Jacob. He's great for us because he's a lot like us. He's got a backstory. He's made some big mistakes, which he's having to live with now. He's got a difficult family life. He's just a complicated guy. And he's got God in his life, but you would never call him a model believer. There's a lot else going on as well. And I think in lots of ways, he's more relatable, as my children like to say. You know, he's not, when you look at the Apostle Paul, you think he's supercharged as a Christian. I could never be like that. You look at Jacob and you go, yeah, I get it. And today we're looking at one of the most famous episodes in Jacob's life. And what happens in this episode is that God stages an intervention, a little bit like that one on the screen. You know, family and friends sometimes stage an intervention with an addict, don't they? And they say, come on, now is the time, things have got to change. And it's actually quite a traumatic moment in Jacob's life. As we're going to see at the end of the passage, Jacob leaves with a limp. He's never the same again after this night. But through this intervention, God teaches Jacob what it really means to have a relationship with the Almighty God. And Jacob comes through it transformed. He becomes a new man. He gets a new name. He has a new courage, a new centeredness, which he never had in his life before. Okay, so let's get into this passage together. And before we get to the intervention, which we're all interested in, but that's from verse 24 onwards, we need a bit of a run-up. That's the first 23 verses. And that is the context in which the intervention happens. So where are we? Well, we're with Jacob and he's on his way back. He's on his way home to the promised land. If you're with us, you'll know that he fled the land 20 years ago. And that all happened because he cheated his brother. And he's been on the run ever since because his brother Esau wants to kill him. But of course, although he's on his way home, what is really filling his horizon is, what about my brother? What about Esau? You know, is time the great healer? 20 years have passed. Or is Esau just as ready to kill me as he was way back then? And so what does he do? Well, he's nervous. So he sends messengers. He sends messengers to his brother saying, look, I'm coming back and I want peace. Verse 6, and the messengers returned to Jacob saying, look at verse 6, we came to your brother Esau and he is coming to meet you. And then here's the classic, here's the crucial words. And there are 400 men with him. You get that message. You're Jacob and you are quaking in your boots. There's not a gentle message of peace. All you get is the news that Esau is coming straight out to meet you and he's got a small army with him. And you don't know what's going to happen. This does not look good. And understandably, verse 7, Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. And what does he do? And I put there on your sheets three strategies. He's a great strategist. He's very devious, very cunning. And he comes up with these three strategies. Strategy number one, verse 7, he wants to minimize the losses. Verse 7, he divided the people who were with him and the flocks and herds and camels into two camps, thinking if Esau comes to one camp and attacks it, then the campers that is left will escape. Now, he's clearly not thinking he's got any real chance militarily to defend himself against 400 men. So what's the best he can hope for? Well, here's what I'm going to plan. Only half of us are going to die. I mean, that the rest of us might get a, you know, a head start. We might be able to run away. That is how serious this situation is. Imagine, you know, being at that point in your family where you just have to decide, okay, it's 50-50. Strategy number two is he prays. And this is actually a good sign for Jacob. He's been strikingly prayerless in his life until now. But this situation is different, and it really has brought him to his knees in a way that all the other things haven't. And strategy number three is he tries to pacify Esau. He tries to soften the anger of his brother. And so he sends Esau a gift. And what a gift. I might, just to keep you awake, ask you to do some maths now. So look at verse 14. We've got at least one mathematician amongst you. How many animals does he send him? Verse 14, 200 female goats and 20 male goats. Okay, you got the tally? Where are we? 220. 200 ewes and 20 rams. Okay. 30 milking camels. Forget the calves. 30 milking camels and their calves. 470 and calves. 40 cows and 10 bulls. I'm looking at Stacey because 520. Okay. 20 female donkeys, 10 male donkeys. Say again. I think it's a lot, isn't it? Nearly, if you count the calves, we're nearly 600, aren't we? It's a lot. That's what I got to. And this, I'm guessing, this is the bulk of Jacob's earthly wealth. I mean, this is how scared he must be. What good are my possessions when I'm dead? I may as well do something useful with them today while I'm still alive. And he sends them off as a gift. And he sends them off in waves, so that wave after wave, five times, wave after wave after wave after wave of gifts just keep arriving with Esau. Each time Esau reads the same delivery note, and it always says this, from your devoted brother Jacob, can't wait to see you, five times. And why is he doing it, verse 20? In the hope that he might pacify his brother. Maybe he won't kill me. And all of that is the context for what is going to happen next, the intervention. You probably know stories tend to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. There's a problem at the beginning of the story. You know, if you're watching a film, reading a book, that what's the problem at the beginning? In this case, Jacob is terrified. His brother's going to take revenge on him. There's a conclusion. We actually don't get the full conclusion until the next chapter, chapter 33. But we're going to see Jacob is a new man with this new courage and confidence as he heads out to meet his brother. And then the middle of the story, classically, is helps you understand the purpose of the story. How do we get from A to B? What's the turning point? And the pivot that gets you from one to the other, we might expect the pivot to be, well, all of Jacob's strategies have worked. Do you remember his three strategies? And we, you know, he finds out that they work. Or it might be that God comes and reassures Jacob and he says, Jacob, I heard your prayer and don't worry, I've got this. I'm going to protect you. We don't get that. God doesn't do that at all, actually. In fact, if you think about it, if God did do that and put his arm around Jacob, that would have dealt with the immediate problem, you know, the fear of his brother, but it would have left Jacob unchanged. In fact, it might have confirmed Jacob in his current way of relating to God. You know, this is what I always do. I pray, God comes, he's my assistant. He helps me sort out my agenda, and then on I go again. And that's how that this relationship tends to work. But what we're going to see is that God has way, way higher ambitions for Jacob. He doesn't just want to give him comfort or relief. He doesn't just want to fix his immediate problem. He wants to see something much greater. And the pivot of the passage, the midpoint, is way more strange, way more wonderful than we might imagine. And it's this unsettling intervention. So that's where we're headed. So let's get into this moment where God stages the intervention. This is the wrestling match. And what we're going to see is these three points. Point one, God may make us weak. Point two, but it's so that we come to depend on him. And then point three, so that we come out truly strengthened. That's where we're headed. And we're going to do the first one first. God may make us weak. And I think this is probably the most weird and shocking part of the account. In verse 23, Jacob has sent his family and his possessions across the river. And then we read verse 24, Jacob was left alone. Here at last, here he is with his thoughts and alone. And then out of somewhere, something smacks him and it crashes him to the ground out of nowhere in the dark. And it says, verse 24, and a man wrestled with Jacob until the breaking of the day. And we're reading it, we're thinking, what is going on here? Who is this mysterious nighttime attacker? Jacob's thinking, but possibly it's going to be Laban, isn't it? You know, he's come to reclaim his daughters. He's broken the covenant. Or maybe it's Esau, he's thinking, you know, finally having it out with me after 20 years of waiting. And now he's ambushed me. At this stage, all we know as readers is that verse 24, who is it? It's a man. But by the end of the episode, Jacob and we are in no doubt that this man is also God himself. In verse 30, Jacob renames that place Peniel. You'll see your footnote even on the handouts. We've got the footnote. And it means, what does Peniel mean? The face of God. I'm just checking. If your neighbor has started to drift, just nudge them. It'll do them good. Peniel means the face of God. For he says, I have seen God face to face, verse 30. So we know that this man is also divine. And somewhere in this episode, Jacob comes to realize who it is he's actually dealing with. Perhaps he realized it there in verse 25. Verse 25, when the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Just think about what happened here. I know some of us in this room are into martial arts, but none of you have learned this trick. You just touch a hip and it's put out of socket. This is clearly someone with extraordinary, irresistible, supernatural strength. You know, no one can do that with just a touch. And Jacob clearly realized that here is someone that if he wanted me, he could crush me like that if he chose to. And yet somehow, here is someone who is therefore choosing not to crush me. Then the stranger said, verse 26, let me go, for the day has broken. And I want to suggest that this request is actually, it's not for the attacker's sake, it's for Jacob's sake. Think about it. Elsewhere, God says, for example, Exodus 33, you cannot see my face, for no one can see me and live. And clearly, Jacob has the same conclusion in verse 30. I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered. Somehow I've come through this alive, and I don't know how. Isn't this crazy? So the stranger is saying, look, it's better that I go before the sun comes up. Otherwise, you know, if you got the full view of me, this could be very bad for you. It's very dangerous. Anyway, whatever it is, whether it's through the touching the hip or the, you know, request to leave, through this encounter at some stage, Jacob is coming to this realization that he is in the presence of someone unlike he's ever encountered before. Here is a God man. Here is a divine person. Someone actually way more terrifying even than Esau with 400 fighting men. Here is someone I should fear much, much more. Incidentally, we're not told explicitly that this is the Christ, this is Jesus, but that is the conclusion of lots of people across history, that this is most likely a pre-incarnate appearance of the Lord Jesus, pointing forward to what Christ will do gloriously and permanently many years later when he's conceived in Mary's womb. And this incident points us forward to that moment. And here, this divine person is someone who, despite attacking him, is also, we've discovered, somehow for Jacob. His purpose is not to crush him. So Jacob thinks there must be some good purpose for me in this encounter. And so Jacob comes to recognize that, yes, God may make us weak. And he does. He brings real difficulty, real troubles and pain into our lives. We know that. But point two, he does it say that we depend on him. Verse 26, Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. And I want to suggest this prayer from Jacob is the high point. This is the turning point of the whole narrative. And it's this prayer that causes God to respond in the way that he does. Verse 27, he, that's the God man, he said to Jacob, what is your name? He said, Jacob. Then the God man said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. Now, you may remember, if you've been with us in the series, Esau said back in chapter 27, 36, is my brother not rightly named Jacob? For he has cheated me these two times. And the footnote at that time explained, Jacob means he takes by the heel or he cheats. But God says here in this passage, your name shall no longer be called the cheat. Your name is now going to be Israel. And you can see from your footnote, Israel means he strives with God. For, verse 28, you have striven with God and man and have prevailed. So God, he hears this prayer from Jacob, bless me, and he responds positively to Jacob because despite everything that has just happened to Jacob and this injury that he's just sustained, Jacob does a brilliant thing and he clings to God. I know that you're the one who's hurt me. I know that you were in this situation, but Lord, I will not let you go. And Jacob has come to a new realization that here in his midst is God, and God is the one who can truly bless, the only one ultimately who can bless him. All his life, and we've seen this in our series, haven't we? Jacob has been a guy chasing blessing. That's the whole plot of this, chasing it in the wrong way. Even in the womb, we saw this in chapter 25, Jacob, we're told, wrestled with his brother. He came out as a wrestler. Then as an adult, he wrestled Esau, his brother, for his birthright. Then he wrestled Isaac, his dad, for his blessing. Then he spent two decades wrestling Laban, his uncle, wrestling with trickery and cunning schemes. And now, as Jacob attempts to enter the promised land, as he prepares to meet with his brother Esau, he's discovering that actually it is the Lord who is his real opponent. The same God who promised him the land in verse chapter 28 is now stopping him. He's preventing Jacob from entering the land. He's the real obstacle. The Lord has finally brought Jacob to this point, and it's a point of helplessness and desperation. And Jacob is finally realizing for the first time in his life that all his strength, all his sweat, all his scheming, and he's a brilliant schemer, he's a very able man, and he's discovering that none of it is enough. At last, he's realizing that he has been struggling for blessing his whole life. And yet he's been pursuing it in completely the wrong way, because he's discovered that true blessing can only come ultimately from the Lord. He is the one source of all blessing. And he discovers that it can only come from pleading for it as a gift there in verse 26. There's a place later in the Bible, the prophet Hosea in chapter 12, and he refers to this chapter of the Bible, this episode. And Hosea says this, Jacob strove with the angel. Angel just means the messenger of God. So he is both God and from God, like the creed says, God from God. Jacob strove with the angel and prevailed. He wept and sought his favor. And the second phrase explains how it is that Jacob prevailed and won his victory. You know this, don't you? We've talked about this a lot. Hebrew poetry, you get two lines and each one helps inform the other line. So the second line explains how the first line is true. So Jacob won. How did he win? Answer, through weeping and pleading. And what kind of a victory is that? That apparently this is the secret to true victory in life. Do you want to win in life? Well, here's the secret. You need to be brought low, recognize your weakness, recognize your desperation, and then come to God where you need to recognize that it's come from him, whatever your difficulties are, and he's allowed them in your life for good purposes, hard as that is to hear. And then you've got to cling to God anyway and recognize he is for you and he is the only one who can truly bless you. This is the secret of prevailing, of conquering in life. Then Jacob asked him, please tell me your name, verse 29. But the attacker said, why is it that you ask my name? I think here he's saying, you know, Jacob, by now you should know my name, don't you? By this stage, I think you do know who I am if you ask yourself. Of course you do. Why do you ask? And there he blessed him. Isn't that wonderful? Here it is. All his life he's been searching for one thing, and now here he receives it. This is the real thing, the real blessing, the real acceptance, the real approval that he's been fighting for his whole life. And then finally, verse 29, he receives it. I bless you. Wonderful. I wonder whether we have realized this yet about the Lord. God is the only one who can truly bless. Do you know this? All our lives, we chase blessing, don't we? If only I can get that thing. If only I can achieve that. If only I can get approval from that person. If only, and we add to the list. And the Lord wants us to realize this morning that he is the only one who can truly bless. That blessing that we're chasing over there can only come ultimately from him. Of course it can. He's our creator. He's the one we're made for. None of these things are over there are big enough to ultimately give us what we seek. And have we realized also that the difficulties and struggles in our lives, the weaknesses, have also come to us as gifts from the Lord? They're actually wake-up calls. They're deliberately there to bring us to our knees, to make us realize we are not God. We're not in control. We are dependent as creatures. And Jacob would forever limp after this episode. And yet I guarantee that if we had him up here at Grace Church, gave him the mic and said, tell us about that day, you know, that was an awful thing that happened to you. I guarantee he would say, yeah, honestly, this has been a real pain to me, but I really thank God for what happened that night. Without this limp, I just would have carried on my life exactly as I was going. I would have careered through life with me at the center of it. Of course, I prayed sometimes. Who doesn't pray when they're in difficulty? But God was very, very small in my life. In fact, I basically used him as an assistant to bring in when I needed help with my agenda. And yet that night was wonderful. I got to know the true God. I got a new identity. I'm not Jacob the cheat anymore. I'm Israel. I'm the one who finally realized God is the one I need to wrestle with. And I sought his blessing. And my life has never been the same. At a previous church, I had a friend at the church called Colin. And Colin had been born with a genetic condition, and it meant that he had severe learning difficulties. Even as an adult, he was slightly older than me. He was never able to work or live independently. And it also meant that Colin died in his late 20s. And it was a big moment in the church. It was very sad. And we all went to his funeral. And his father had come over from Hong Kong. And his father spoke at the funeral, and he said, he began with these words, I thank God for Colin's condition. And you can imagine, you know, you could hear a pin drop. What is this man saying? You know, the very reason we are here today is because of this terrible condition that Colin had. And you thank God for it. And he carried on and he said, I thank God for Colin's condition, because if he hadn't had this condition, we would have never needed to send him to a special school, the one run by the Christians. And we would never have heard of Jesus. And we'd never have heard of the blessing and the hope that comes from him. And he went on to explain that now, because of that, there was their family had a true hope. He said, it is a sad day today, but we know that one day Colin will be raised with perfect health and an unending life. And so we give thanks and we give the glory to him. Now, here is a father who had learned what Jacob learned that day. God may make us weak, but he does it purposefully. He does it so that we come to depend on him and go to him for the blessing. Maybe as I explain that, you're thinking of other situations in your life, as I have, things that have been very, very painful. Maybe there's been illnesses, maybe real struggles with sin, really horrible things in your life. And yet somehow you can even look back with thankfulness now because of ways the Lord has used them in your life. And you've learned a dependence on him because of that. Now, in this encounter, Jacob doesn't just discover that God's the one who can truly bless. He also discovers, this is the next point, God's the one truly worth fearing. So the first half of this chapter, the intro, the context, do you remember, Jacob was dominated by the fear of his brother. Verse 11, please deliver me from the hand of Esau. I fear him. That was his prayer. And then in verse 30, Jacob finally realizes that actually God is the one who is truly worth fearing. Verse 30, Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, which means face of God, saying, for I have seen God face to face. And yet, here's the crazy thing, my life has been delivered. I'm still alive. From now on, I want everyone for all time, whenever they say the name of this place, I want them to remember what has happened on this day, that somehow, and no one knows how, but I saw God and I lived. That is amazing. Isn't that crazy? For some reason, I've been obsessing for years now about seeing my brother face to face. But now I realize all of that is small fry compared to what has happened today. God is the one truly worth fearing. That's what he's discovered. And Jacob also comes to understand that God's the one whose favor, whose acceptance is the one that truly counts. We've seen this already, but what was it that dominated the first half of the passage? Well, Jacob wanted his brother's favor. Do you remember how many animals were there? Yeah, nearly 600, 500 and something. And they were sent to Esau in five separate waves. And what was the point of it all? Perhaps Esau, verse 20, will accept me. That's the big concern throughout the whole thing, Esau's acceptance. And now, after the intervention from God, Jacob finally realized that God, he is the one whose favor really matters. I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered. For some reason, I have been obsessing all this time about my brother's acceptance, and now I've been accepted and approved by the Lord himself. I've been received by him. I've got the nod from God. And that has changed everything. You'll remember that I'm only really allowed, well, in my last church, I was only allowed a Lord of the Rings quote once every 6 months. And you'll know what freedom it is that is no longer. Anyway, there's a place in Lord of the Rings where Faramir says, the praise from the praiseworthy is beyond all rewards. Maybe you've heard that quote. The praise of the praiseworthy is beyond all rewards. And many of us spend our lives chasing some kind of acceptance. Maybe for you it's that well done from your parents, or maybe it's from your peers, or maybe it's from your industry. And we obsessively chase this well done for our whole lives. But then even when it comes, it strangely isn't quite enough. And the reason it's not quite enough is because you and I were made for a bigger well done, a bigger acceptance, the favor of our Creator. As the quote says, the praise of the praiseworthy, the one who is truly worthy. If we have his acceptance, as Jacob discovers, finally, it's a game changer. We've received it. And this is a strange pivot to the story. This wasn't what Jacob wanted. If you'd asked him at the beginning of the story, what is it that you're seeking? Well, he just wanted God to say, it's going to be okay with your brother. You're not going to die. And actually, what has happened in this episode is nothing's really changed. Jacob is still in the same situation that he was in before, only it's all got a lot worse. You know, now he's still got his murderous brother to face. but he's going to face him, verse 25, with this injured hip, which is definitely not going to help him outrun Esau. And in one sense, although everything is the same in his situation or worse, in another sense, everything is completely different. Jacob has come through this ordeal a new man, and by wrestling with God, he has come out, and this is the final point, truly strengthened. He's strengthened because now God is at the center. Verse 31, the sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. So it's a lovely verse, isn't it? He comes out, he's had this dark night of wrestling, and now the sun rises, and there is a dawn of a new day, a dawn of new hope. And he may be weaker physically, it says he's limping, but he's also come through much, much stronger. He has received at last the blessing of God. He's received God's acceptance. He's come through. He's a new man with a new name. And this experience has somehow calmed his fears and given him a new confidence. After all, if he can see God face to face and come out to tell the tale, come out smiling, then meeting his brother face to face doesn't seem quite so terrible after all. Now, chapter 33 is for next week. You're going to have to come back for that. I'm going to give you a little spoiler now, because the first verse of chapter 33 begins, Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming and 400 men with him. And so, you know, the thing he's been dreading finally arrives. He's still facing the same problem. What does he do? Well, he puts his family in order, you know, just as but then, just as we're imagining what old Jacob would do, I know what old Jacob would do. He would arrange it somehow so that he's hiding at the back, and, you know, he'd come up with some scheme and he would escape at the last minute, or he'd hide. But then verse 3 says he himself went on before them, before his family. Jacob strides out right at the front. You see, what has happened? Grace gives guts. What can man do to me now that I have been blessed by God? And we see striding out a new Jacob, striding out in confidence to meet his murderous brother. Even though God has not actually given him any specific promise about what is going to happen, but he's just a new kind of person now. And that's the point of this passage. The story arc, you know, it could have gone from Jacob's fear to Jacob's confidence by God just going, I've got this. Leave it to me. But as we saw, Jacob would be the same Jacob as he was before. He would still be just as obsessed with his own petty agenda, still looking for blessing in all the wrong places, still going about it in the wrong way, still fearful of whatever the next threat and the next threat might be. And so God did that night something much, much more wonderful. He staged an intervention. And through this ordeal, God revealed himself to Jacob. I'm the one who can truly bless. I'm the one truly worth fearing, Jacob. I'm the one whose favor actually counts in life. And so Jacob comes through this experience, and he's a different man. He's much, much weaker, more dependent, and yet ultimately much, much stronger, because he has God right at the center. So I started with that question, how central does God need to be in our lives? And perhaps when I asked that question at the beginning, you were thinking, oh yeah, we're in church, I get it. You know, they're always on about the same thing. They always want me to make God, you know, maybe 10% more central in my life. Well, I'll listen, and, you know, maybe 5 or maybe 3, depending on, you know, how I feel. And perhaps that is exactly how Jacob would have approached that question, you know, at the start of our passage, if he were here. But of course, something happens in Jacob, and he comes to discover some objective realities about who God is. God is central in our universe. It's not, you know, how central shall I make him? The reality is he just is at the center. And so the only way to actually know the true God, the almighty God, the God who is actually there, the God who is ultimate, you know, the one who can truly bless and who's truly worth fearing, so on. The only way to have him in our lives at all is to reckon with him as he truly is, the one who is at the center of everything. I love the way the late American writer Tim Keller puts this. And he described a moment in his life that happened to him as a child, and it changed his life. And his Sunday school teacher said to him, and he remembered it all his days, She said, let's assume that the distance between the Earth and the Sun, which is actually 93 million miles, now let's assume that is the thickness of one sheet of paper. Can you do that? 93 million miles is that much. And then she said, if that's the case, the distance between the Earth and the nearest star, Proxima Centauri, would be a stack of paper over 20 meters high. You could still see it outside this window. That's the distance to the nearest star. And then she said, and the diameter of our galaxy would be a stack of papers. So we're already 20 meters. It would be a stack of papers 300 miles high, you know, here to Germany. That's if the distance between us and the sun, 93 million miles, is a piece of paper. And then she said, this galaxy, and this is just one galaxy amongst many, is a speck of dust in the universe. And, you know, poor little Tim, his jaw drops and he's just thinking, wow. And she said this, the Bible tells us that Jesus holds this whole universe together by the word of his power. And finally, she asked the children this question. Tell me, children, is this the kind of person you ask into your life to be your assistant? Is this the kind of God who you will ask into your life to help you with your little agenda? And he was never the same again. It's just an absurd thing, isn't it? But once we reckon with who God is, as Jacob had to in this episode, we discover that he must be central. How could it be otherwise? And yet once we make that discovery and we discover how awesome and glorious he is, it is wonderfully freeing because we come out weaker and yet so much stronger because we're centered on him. And there is a chance for you to ask questions. Samuel mentioned there's a QR on the sheets, I think, or a link. But why not now, before you think of all your questions, why not just come to God in the quiet and do business with him. Recognize him for who he is and bow before him. Why don't we have a moment's quiet?